This is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
This podcast is made possible thanks to our patrons. Please join me in welcoming and thanking new patrons: Katie Wilkin, Cynthia Cabrera, Abby Martin, Carrie Ann Doring, Alexander, El Carlos, Allison D., James Stein, Frederick Schroeder, Alex Nadeo, Jeremy Leager, Ryan Davis, Namaris93, Hallie Moody, Melissa Blaumuller, Mackenzie, Luke Atmatic, oh patrons, Brennan McCaffrey, Adam White, Mark Christopher Cole, Christian Kale, Sam Lujan, Reefhugger100, Chelsea, Leroy Olivas, Stacey Vallejos, Luke and Jess snuggle after listening to Creepy every night. Oh, I'm sure my legal department won't let me say what I want to say about that. So thanks. Marian Mahir, Anthony Hubbard, Frederico Poi, Thomas Botello, Sergeant B.S., Chantel Red, Cheyenne Elizabeth, Caitlin, Nicholas Saunders, I'm Dead and Still Listening. Thank you for your commitment. Alejandro Patino, K. Buffalo, L.W., Catherine Waugh, Sandra Camilla Mullenberg, Michael Wubbs, Sari Sternberg, Maximus Drost, Kay Sini, Bailey Horror, Nick at Night, Big Booty Judy, Insanity Inc., Kathy Lawson, Josh Berkeley, Charles, the mutant raccoon from the gas station. Oh no, they've learned how to use computers. Casey J. Stalker, Abel Krunk, Matt Green, King of the Underworld, your father, Lucifer, P.S. Please call me, we need to talk. Oh, now we need to talk, Dad? Really? Kyle J. and Alex Landreth. Our patrons mean everything to us, and we do all we can to give back for their generosity. Starting for just $1 a month, all patrons get early commercial-free access to all episodes along with their shoutouts. For $5 a month, you not only get at least 4 new patron-only episodes per week, but you also get immediate access to our entire back catalog of almost 500 bonus episodes. We also have levels that include coffee mugs, t-shirts, and logo hoodies. As you can see, a lot of people have been taking advantage of the deal we're only running for about another week. Remember, and this only applies for September 2020, if you pay for a year of Patreon in advance, I'll give you 2 months of Patreon content for free. That's 12 months for the price of 10. As soon as the 31 Days of Horror starts on October 1st, this offer ends. And this offer only applies for people who want the annual membership. You'll still be able to do monthly options at the standard rates. And remember, come October 1st, our Patreon levels will be increasing to account for the amount of content that people are able to download immediately. Remember, we don't do series or seasons. So when you sign up, you get everything available at the Patreon level all at once on a personalized RSS feed you can put into apps like iTunes, CastBox, Pocket Cast, and more. Anyone signing up before October 1st will be locked into the rate for as long as they're a member. That's my thanks to you for your support of our show. If you'd like to see how you can support the podcast and get rewarded for doing so, either with free months of content or just to get locked into our low prices before October, please check out our reward tiers at patreon.com/creepypod. Now...
This is Creepy, a podcast dedicated to sharing the most famous, chilling, and disturbing creepypastas and urban legends in the world. Whether these stories truly happened or are simply fabrications is for you to decide. These stories may contain graphic depictions of violence and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Creepy presents Glenmont. Written by Peter Frost David and produced by Steve Blizzon. If you're armed and at the Glenmont Metro, please shoot me. Make it a headshot. Shoot me in the temple, aiming slightly downwards. I need the bullet to travel the shortest possible distance through my brain before it hits my hippocampus. If I'm lucky, The sensation of the gunshot ripping through my skull will only last a few decades. As awful as this sounds, you'll be doing me an enormous favor. Death by a headshot, as soon as possible, is vastly better than the alternative. My ordeal started over 10,000 years ago. At 10:15 this morning, I earn extra money participating in drug trials. I'm a so-called healthy subject who takes experimental drugs to help assess side effects. Once it was a kidney drug. A few times it's been something for blood pressure or cholesterol. This morning they told me the drug I took was a psychoactive substance intended to accelerate brain function. None of the drugs I tested so far had ever done anything for me, in the recreational sense. In other words, none of the drugs I've ever tested have given me a killer buzz or mellowed me out or anything. Maybe I've always ended up in the placebo group, but nothing I've tested has affected me at all. Today's drug was different. This shit worked. They gave me a pill at 10:15 and told me to hang out in the waiting room until they called me back for some tests. Only about 30 minutes, the research assistant told me. I flopped onto the waiting room couch and read a few articles from a copy of Psychology Today that was sitting on the coffee table. They hadn't called me back when I finished the Psychology Today, so I picked up the US News and read it cover to cover. Then I read an old Scientific American. What was taking them so damn long? I sluggishly turned my head to look at the wall clock. It was only 10:23 a.m. I had read all three magazines in 8 minutes. I remember thinking this was going to be a long day. I was right. The waiting room had a little bookshelf with some used hardcovers on it. When I stood up to walk to the bookshelf, it felt like my legs barely worked. It's not that they were weak, they were just slow. It took a full minute just to stand up off the couch, and another minute to take 2 steps to the bookcase. I scanned the old books on the shelf and picked out a copy of Moby Dick. My arms had the same problem as my legs. Just reaching 1 foot in front of me to grab the book took a long time. I actually got bored just waiting for my hand to reach the spine of the book. I slogged back to the couch and collapsed into it in a slow motion fall that reminded me of the low gravity hops of astronauts on the moon. I opened Moby Dick, slowly, and began reading. I started with Call Me Ishmael and got as far as Ahab throwing his pipe into the sea, which was all the way to frickin' chapter 30. Before they called me back. How are you feeling? The research assistant asked me. I feel slow, I said. Actually, it's the other way around. Everything seems slow because you're so fast. But my legs, my arms, they're moving in slow motion. Your body seems like it's moving in slow motion because your brain is fast. Your brain is running 10 or 20 times faster than normal. You are thinking and perceiving reality at an accelerated pace. But your body is constrained by the laws of biomechanics. Frankly, you're moving much faster than a normal person. She pantomimed a jogging motion. But your brain is running so much faster right now that even your fast walk seems very slow to you. I thought about my slow motion flop onto the waiting room couch. Even if my muscles had slowed down, my body would still react to gravity the same way. But in the waiting room, I even fell in slow motion. Slow muscles couldn't explain why gravity seemed to be weaker. My brain was going to warp 10. That's how I managed to read 3 magazines and the first 30 chapters of Moby Dick in 15 minutes. They ran a series of tests on me. The physical tests were fun. They made me juggle 3 balls, then 4, then 6. I had no problem keeping six balls in the air because they seemed to be moving so slowly. It was boring, frankly, waiting for each ball to move through the arc so I could catch it with my slow motion hands and toss it back into the air. They threw Cheerios in the air and I caught them with chopsticks. They dropped a handful of coins and I counted the total value before they hit the ground. The cognitive tests were less fun, but very illuminating. Finish a 50-word word search. 3 seconds. Solve an intricate maze drawn on a poster-sized paper. 2 seconds. View a slideshow projected at 10 images per second and answer detailed questions about what I saw. 95% correct. They told me I measured over 250 on the Knopp scale. Apparently, that's deep into the superhuman range of thinking speeds. And then they sent me home. "It'll wear off in a few hours," they said, which will seem like days to you. "Try to use the residual effects to get some work done. Catch up on work emails while you're still in high speed mode." The ride home was horrible. It was only 3 metro stops, and in real world time, it only took about 35 minutes. But in my drug accelerated hypertime, it felt like days. Days. Just walking out of the medical research suite to the elevator seemed like it took an hour. I sprinted out of the office, willing my legs to push me faster. But the laws of biomechanics held me prisoner. As accelerated as my brain was, I couldn't do anything to make my legs work faster. The huge disconnect between my body and mind made it extremely difficult to judge how and when to slow down, turn, or rotate my body. I'd basically turned into a giant slow-motion spaz. I misjudged my speed and rammed into the wall by the elevator button at a pretty good speed. Even though I could see the wall coming at me, I couldn't make my finger, outstretched to hit the elevator button, move fast enough, and I jammed it against the wall. Hard. The pain was intense. If my brain had been running at regular speed, it probably only would have hurt for 30 seconds or so. But in my accelerated state, the intense pain seemed to last for half an hour. 45 minutes, maybe. The elevator ride was horrible. It felt like I spent 4 or 5 hours just descending 7 floors, with nothing to look at but the interior of the elevator car. I sprinted to the metro station. I have to admit, this part was almost fun. Even though my body moved at what seemed to me super slow speed, I could still carefully choose how and where to place my feet, swing my arms, and turn my torso. It only took a block or two to get used to having a brain that ran 2 dozen times faster than my body. Then I basically sprint danced the rest of the way, twisting and juking between people on the sidewalk and dodging moving cars with inches, aka minutes, of clearance. I spent an hour in my time frame, descending into the subway and running to the platform. Endless tedium waiting 6 minutes for the Red Line train to arrive. Although there was more to look at on the metro platform than inside the elevator, it was still intensely boring. I should have stolen that copy of Moby Dick. The Red Line train roared into the station in slow motion. The normal high-pitched squeal of its brakes was frequency shifted by my high-speed mind to a long, low tone, like a monotone tuba solo. It wasn't just a squealing subway train that was 3 octaves lower than normal. All sound was slowed down to the point of near inaudibility. Voices were gone, shifted below the threshold frequency of my hearing. I did manage to hear a screaming baby on my subway car. Her shrieks slowed to sound like whale songs. Sharp sounds like a car horn and truck bouncing over potholes were low, muddied roars like distant thunder. Back at the research offices, I could still hear and communicate with the research staff. But now verbal communication with anyone would be impossible. The effects of the drug were still intensifying. I spent what seemed like days on that fucking red line train. Days. Listening to the whale song of the screaming baby and the tuba solo of the brakes, where ordinary voices were frequencies shifted out of my audio range. Smell didn't seem to be affected. I never became nose blind to the body odor, the stench of the train's brakes, the melange of farts and other smells wafting through the metro car. I finally got back to my apartment. Sprinting through my open door and into the front hall at full speed was like a slow, relaxing drift down a lazy river. I was relieved to be home. At least I had stuff I could do there. I picked up the book I was reading, 100 Years of Solitude, and finished it. Despite turning the pages so quickly that I tore many of them, it seemed like most of the time I spent finishing the book was spent on page turning and not actually reading. 3 minutes had passed since I got home. I tried surfing the internet. My God, it takes a long time for computers to boot these days. But it's too frustratingly slow. Hours, seemingly, to load each new page, and a fraction of a second to read it. 100 articles in my newsfeed read, and just 3 more minutes done. I dipped into my pile of yet-to-be-read books and finished 2 more. 4 minutes had passed. I decided to try to sleep off the remaining effects of the drug. Unfortunately, whatever part of my mind is responsible for perception, that part's been accelerated to hyperspeeds by the drug. The part that's been accelerated to hyperspeeds by the drug isn't the same part that governs sleep. Despite being awake for what I perceived as days, my physical brain still thought it was 1:25 p.m. I was not ready for sleep. Nevertheless, I tried to sleep. I walked to my bedroom, a slow 45-minute drift through my apartment, and flung myself into bed, lazily falling like a feather onto the mattress. I closed my eyes and lay there for hours and hours, 10 minutes of reality time, before giving up. Sleep would not come. I was facing what was going to feel like days, or maybe even weeks, of being trapped in a slow-motion prison. So I took an Ambien. The sensation of the pill and the splash of water I used to swallow it sliding down my throat was sickening. A lump that blocked my breathing, moving like a slug down my esophagus. I read a book. 10 minutes had passed. I read another. 18 minutes since I took the Ambien. I threw the book across the room in disgust at my situation. The book slowly pirouetted and spun through the air, like a leaf blowing in a breeze. It hit the wall with a long, faint rumble, the only sound I had heard for what seemed like hours. Then drifted to the floor like a flip-flop sinking in a swimming pool. The force of gravity hadn't changed since I took the pill. The laws of physics were the same. It was just my perception of time that had gone wackadoo. This meant I could use the speed thing that seemed to fall as a way of judging effects of the drug. Based on how long it took the book to drift to the floor, I estimated the effects of the drug were still intensifying. I read a magazine. I turned on the television. I clearly saw each frame of video like I was watching a slideshow. Frustrated, I turned the television off. I read some more. The first 2 books of Churchill's A History of English-Speaking Peoples. Not exactly a light read. Frankly, I hated it. But given the hours of tedium it would take to go get another book off my bookshelf, just sitting on the couch and reading Churchill was better. Or at least less worse. It had now been 35 minutes since I took the Ambien. I lay down on the couch and closed my eyes. Time passed. I exhaled for more hours. Sleep would not come. I needed a new plan. I decided to go back to the offices where they gave me the drug. Maybe they'd have something that could counteract its effects, or at least something to knock me out until it wore off. I exited my apartment as fast as possible, taking hours in my time frame to do so. I didn't even bother locking the door. It would have taken too long. Down the stairs, it's faster than the elevator if you run, through the lobby, out the front door, and onto the street. These few things felt like a long day at the office. Sprinting down the street, dancing and weaving between pedestrians with what must have looked to them superhuman dexterity. Down the first flight of stairs at the metro, across the landing, another hour. Then onto the second flight of stairs. That's when the Ambien hit me. The Ambien didn't make me sleepy. Not at all. Instead, it must have had a severe cross-reaction with the experimental drug I took this morning. I was bounding down the second flight of stairs, moving in slow motion, but still making perceptible progress. Then, wham! Everything stopped. The dull roar of the street and metro noise ceased, replaced by the most perfect silence I've ever experienced. My downwards motion seemed to completely freeze. Before the Ambien kicked in, my perception of time was maybe a few hundred times slower than real time. After the Ambien took effect, time moved thousands of times slower. Every second seemed like days to me. Even just moving my eyes to focus on a new point was like an impossibly slow scroll across my visual field. Over the course of the afternoon, I learned how to walk, run, and jump when my mind ran hundreds of times faster than my body. But with another four or five orders of magnitude of slowdown caused by Ambien, body control was almost impossible. I fell on the stairs. Even though I was all but frozen in mid-step, controlling my muscles was impossible. I commanded my foot forwards for hours, then backwards for hours more when it seemed like I would miss the next step. Hours attempting to adjust the angle of my ankle, then readjusting when it felt wrong. Despite these effects, I rolled my ankle on the next step. The pain wasn't at all mitigated by the slowness. Hours of increasing strain on my bent ankle. The nerve signals that sent pain into the brain must work differently than the nerves in my ear. Sonic energy was spread over time, diluted until it was imperceptible. Pain flowed into my brain undiluted by the change in my perception of time. Hours and hours of increasing weight on my turned ankle turned into hours of increasing pain upon increasing pain. I pitched forwards, my high-speed mind completely unable to control my low-speed body. I drifted downwards for days, managing to rotate my torso enough to keep my head from impacting the ground first. I eventually landed on my right shoulder. At first, the impact wasn't even noticeable. Then I felt a slight pressure in my shoulder as it came in contact with the ground. The pressure grew, bringing increasing pain for hour upon hour. My shoulder finally gave out, popping out of its socket with an endless, sickening tug. I came to a stop days later. Crumpled onto the ground, staring at the ceiling. The pain in my shoulder still screaming with the intensity of a fresh, violent injury. I had plenty of time to think during that fall. If every second seemed like days to me, then each minute of real-world time would be like years. Even if the drug cleared out of my system in the next 2 or 3 hours, this nightmare would seem to last centuries. By the time I hit the ground, I had a plan. I would somehow get to the platform, and throw myself in front of a train. I twisted onto my hands and knees, days of my dislocated shoulder crying for relief. I misjudged my rotation and rolled onto my back. I tried again, collapsing onto my face as I tried to figure out how to control a body that moved slower than grass grew. Weeks of effort were finally rewarded with success. I stabilized on my hands and knees. If just getting on all fours was this difficult, I figured walking or running was completely out of the question. So I crawled. I crawled through the metro tunnel. The dumb looks on the faces of the crowd lingered on me for weeks. I crawled under the turnstile and onto the escalator. The escalator spilled the rush hour crowd onto the platform at the speed a glacier spills ice into the sea. I looked out over the crowded platform during my interminable downward ride. The train status sign said the next train wouldn't arrive for 20 minutes. 20 minutes was like a year to me. I'd have to spend a year on the metro platform waiting to die. I crawled off the escalator, enduring days of stupid expressions on the commuters' faces. I crawled a few feet to a concrete bench and curled up next to it, trying to find a position to lessen the pain in my shoulder. Then my problem with time got worse. Impossibly worse. The massive slowdown on the stairs was just the beginning of the interaction between the experimental drug and the Ambien. It fully hit me while I was curled up by the bench. I blinked. Years of darkness followed. Sound was already gone, and with my blink, sight was gone as well. All that existed was the pain from my fall. My hyper-accelerated mind wasted no time compensating for the lack of sensory input. Voices spoke to me. They sung to me in languages that never existed. Patterns and faces and colors came and went in my mind's eye. I recalled my whole life and imagined living another. I forgot English. I settled into a profound despair. I spoke to God. I became God. I imagined a new universe and brought it to life with my thoughts. Then did it all again. And again. My eyes opened with geologic slowness. A faint glow. Weeks. A slit of light. Weeks. A narrow view of the metro platform. Ankles of the commuters near me and an advertisement on the opposite wall. I extracted my phone from my pocket. A project that spanned decades. How can I even explain the boredom? The pain in my shoulder is nothing compared to the boredom. Every thought I can think, I have thought hundreds of times already. The view of ankles and advertisements never changes. Never. The boredom is so intense it's tangible. Like a solid object of metal and stone wedged into my skull. Inescapable. What are my options? If I crawl and fall onto the tracks without an oncoming train to crush me, I won't die. I'll experience even more pain from a 4-foot fall. But I'll most likely be rescued by some do-gooders on the platform and unable to act when the train finally does arrive. My suffering in that scenario will be endless. So I wait for the train. So I can throw myself under it. When it finally hits me, I'll experience the pain of being ripped to pieces for centuries, until finally, the light of life leaves my brain, and my experience ends. I've lived hundreds of lifespans at the foot of this bench. I am far older in spirit than any human who's ever lived. Most of my life experience has been a snapshot of pain huddled on the floor of a subway platform with an unchanging view of ankles and advertisements. This post is my plan B, my Hail Mary, my long shot. I've spent lifetimes typing and posting this message in hope that someone will read it and become convinced that my suffering must end. Someone on this platform right now. Someone who will find the man curled under the bench. The man who crawled down the escalator. And kill him as swiftly as possible. A bullet to the temple. If you're armed and at the Glenmont Metro, please, shoot me.
If you need to talk, we're here to listen. You are not alone. Suicide Prevention Lifeline 1-800-273-8255.
For more information, including pictures and videos of the stories told on this podcast, or to suggest stories for future episodes, please visit us at CreepyPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or email us at creepypod@gmail.com. All stories told on this podcast can be found at creepypastawikia.com and are protected by a Creative Commons license, some rights reserved unless otherwise stated.
The Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network, home of Creepy.
For disturbing and terrifying creepypastas.
SCP Archives, with full cast storytelling. Horror Queers, genre commentary from the LGBTQ perspective. The Boo Crew, for horror-centric interviews. Listen free wherever you stream audio and at bloodydisgusting.com/podcasts.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.